word fiction fool you?
Because this science fiction is the cold, hard truth.
Vanessa finds a possible clue to life on Mars in some very special caves right here on Earth.
These are new life forms that we just discovered right here, right now.
I go to NASA's Deep Space Network and receive signals from distant spacecraft.
Today's signals come from a spacecraft more than 120 million miles from Earth.
Check this out! Who would drive a car like this to work?
Vanessa visits the home of legendary superhero Spawn to find out how a comic book is made.
I'm actually inking a page of Spawn for the next issue.
And Charlie shows us that levitation is not just for magicians anymore.
Wait a minute, this is what I had in mind! Help!
It's Popular Mechanics for Kids, real-life science fiction.
Show to do.
Working on a personal project.
What? Anyways, what is this?
That's a list of stuff that were created by science fiction writers before they were invented by science.
The airplane, the telephone, hats?
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure about the telephone either.
So what's this here?
This is a list of stuff that hasn't been invented yet. Stuff I've come up with that has yet to be created by science. I want to get in on the ground floor of one of these puppies.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this. What's a PCR?
Okay, so let's say you're at your house when all of a sudden you realize you forgot to set the VCR to tape a particular show, like PMK. Well, the PCR is a little device that hooks up the phone to the VCR. So all you have to do is call from a payphone, punch in a code on the pad, and bam, you're recording.
Tyler, that's very smart.
You think so?
Yeah, it's brrilliant.
Okay, well, let's go do the show.
I don't know what real-life science fiction Vanessa found on her adventure, but it's gonna have to be pretty impressive to top this.
Does life on other planets exist? We don't have the answer yet.
But something inside these caves is making scientists think there's a good chance it does.
I'm here in New Mexico, at the Carlsbad Caverns. You see, for a long time, we never believed life could exist under the Earth's surface. But now, scientists have discovered there is life there. We're gonna check it out by going down deep into these caves. You have to crawl on your stomach for several minutes before you can reach this cavern.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Penny.
Welcome to my laboratory.
Whoa, very tight.
We think that if there is life in caves like this on Earth, that maybe there's life on Mars.
Penny's an exobiologist. That means she's a scientist who looks for clues about life on other planets.
What you see in here, Vanessa, is what we call a hostile environment. There's almost no food for organisms to eat. There's very little water in this cave, and there's no light because the caves are dark, and so things like green plants can't live in here.
So do you think under the surface of Mars, we'd be able to find the same thing we'll find today?
We think there's a good possibility of it.
Awesome. Scientists think it's possible there's life on Mars because it's a lot like the Earth. Both planets have polar caps and water vapor. But we already checked out the surface of Mars, and we know there's no life forms there. So if life does exist on Mars, it would have to live underground.
Vanessa, I think we found what we're looking for.
Really?
Yeah. This material in here is what we're interested in. This is called gorilla poop.
Gorilla poop?
Yes. Cavers call it that because it's dark and it's sticky and it gets all over you when you cave through it. Mm. It doesn't look very alive, but this is the kind of material we might be looking for on Mars because inside this stuff are billions and billions of microorganisms.
The microorganisms are called microbes. This is what they look like under a microscope.
these life forms are so small. Here. Ow. Just one microbe is 100 times smaller than the width of a hair. Now we take some samples.
We have to sterilize this tool so that we don't contaminate the microorganisms that we want to study with microorganisms from the surface.
Right.
So what you do is dip it in the alcohol. Good. And then I will flame it, and we'll burn off any of those contaminating microorganisms.
Sterile?
Perfect.
All right.
Go ahead and take a little piece.
Is that enough?
That's fine. And then just pop it right in there. There they are in their new home. And we'll cap it. Captured.
Great, we got them. Microbial life in caves is a very new discovery, and there are different kinds down here. These are new life forms that we just discovered right here, right now. Cool. There's not even a name for them yet. Well, I guess the only way to really know if there is life on Mars is to one day go up there ourselves. Don't let the pen and ink fool you. Who are you?
Hey, hi, good morning. I am Al Simmons, Spawn.
These superheroes are as real as you and me. I step onto the page and into Spawn's universe. That's coming up on PMK.
Herding sheep is easy for a dog, but it's a lot harder for a robot. At the U.S. Navy's Artificial Intelligence Lab, they are figuring out how to teach a machine, this Nomad 20 robot, how to herd. The sheep robot has been trained not to bump into anything. The one that plays the part of the sheepdog will pretend to bump him. That's how he gets him to move in a certain direction. The object is to get the sheep into the circle. Scientists do the test over and over, trying to find the most efficient way to program the robot. Might seem like a weird idea, but these experiments will help us build smarter computers.
Satellites. We need them, but they cost a lot. Now there's an alternative. The Centurion is a solar-powered plane. It will never have to land to refuel, so it'll be able to just float around up in the sky for months at a time. Won't the pilot get lonely? Nope. There is none. The Centurion is completely remote control, like a satellite. It will be able to take pictures, check the weather, or send messages. Almost everything a satellite does. But, unlike a satellite, it can land to be repaired. This is just a test flight, but the Centurion should be flying high in the skies within a few years.
Space, the final frontier. The land of the unknown, the ultimate mystery, the... Well... Maybe not for long, thanks to these. I'm in the Mojave Desert, and this is NASA's Goldstone Complex. This is where NASA communicates with its spacecraft by sending and receiving signals. And this is DSS 14, the largest and most sensitive antenna here at Goldstone. This antenna has picked up some of the most famous signals from space, like these amazing pictures of Mars, the Viking spacecraft being back, and the pictures from Jupiter, the biggest planet in our solar system. They all came in right here. I knew the antenna was big, but I never thought it was this big. In deep space communications, size does matter. That's because most spacecraft have small communications equipment that usually transmits at 20 watts. That's about the same as a refrigerator light bulb. By the time it reaches Earth, the signal is very, very weak. Signal power arriving at this antenna can be as low as 1/1,000,000th of a watt. That's about 20 billion times less than the power that's used to run this digital watch. So, to hear the whispers out there coming from our spacecrafts, the antennas on Earth have to be big.
Hey, Tyler, you made it to the dish. People don't come here often, so this is a rare privilege.
Wow, it's so big, and it's so high up. And it's really, really hot. It's like a giant oven.
Well, we built this complex in the desert because we needed to be far from the power lines and other interferences. In the summertime, it's always hot in the Mojave Desert. But what makes it even hotter up here is the curved shape of the dish.
This shape amplifies the signals coming from spacecraft, but it also amplifies the rays coming from the sun.
An antenna like this can only see a small portion of the sky because of its narrow beam. It's like looking at the universe through a straw.
So you have to point the antenna with absolute precision to receive signals.
We're about to receive some signals from one of our spacecrafts, and I'm scheduled to answer this long-distance call.
Cool.
I'm in the SPC, which stands for Signal Processing Center. This is the control room for the giant antennas.
Ready for downloading.
Today's signals come from a spacecraft called Deep Space One. Deep Space One is more than 120 million miles from Earth. That's 192 million kilometers.
Deep Space One is going to send us pictures of an asteroid called 1991 KD. I'm using the antenna to help bring the signal in.
All right, we got our downlink from the Deep Space One.
Roger, copy. Good job.
Thanks. Oh, one more thing. I was wondering, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I don't know if you let people do this, but would it be okay if I could send a signal into outer space?
I wanted to send a message out to see if intelligent life on other planets would answer me back.
Oh, sorry, we can't do that. While we're tracking a spacecraft, we can only transmit to that spacecraft.
All right, well, thanks anyways. Bye.
Okay, goodbye.
It's really too bad, because, you know, I was thinking of some messages to send to outer space.
From all the kids at Earth to all the kids in the universe, we call in peace.
No. Okay. Come to Earth. Rocks.
The humanoid Tyler Kite wants to communicate with us. Tyler Kite from PMK. Should we take the call? Nah, change the channel.
On July 20th, 1969, three astronauts blasted off to try to take a walk on the moon. Like spaceships today, the Apollo depended on a computer to guide it to the moon and back. It was the most far-out, high-tech equipment you could get. The computer had a total of 38 kilobytes of memory. That's thousands of times less than even the cheapest personal computer today. And it took months of work at a factory to load a new program.
Having a few problems.
Somehow, they made it there. And back again. What happens to you in space if you don't wear a spacesuit? You might have seen a movie where a character was floating around in space without a spacesuit. What would really happen in this situation? Well, if you've ever seen cartoons, when a character gets stuck in outer space, he usually explodes. Here's what would really happen. You would not explode, your blood would not boil, you would not freeze, and you would not even lose consciousness. However, your skin might swell a bit, but it's not permanent or painful. You might get a sunburn, because in space you're less protected from the sun's dangerous UV rays. And you might get the bends. That's bubbles in your blood. It's uncomfortable, but can often be cured. Oh yeah, and after a minute or two you might die. Because there's no oxygen in space. But as long as you're not in space for more than a minute or two, you'll be just fine.
Mini ticks, you complete me.
You can't believe everything you see on TV. Most things are just pure science fiction, like me beaming onto this set. But what about this? Science fiction or reality? Reality. Magnets. Now this is what makes it float. Magnets. Now all magnets have a north pole and a south pole. Now, the opposite poles of two magnets attract. At the same time, those same two poles can also repel or push away from one another. The force can be very strong. So strong that it can lift a train. You're looking at the fastest trains in the world. They can go 500 kilometers an hour. That's more than 300 miles per hour. Why? Because they're not touching anything. They actually float above the track. Well, how do they do it? With magnets. These trains have very strong magnets attached to them. The track is also magnetic. The magnetic force on the track repels the magnets attached to the train cars, and the train hovers as much as 25 centimeters, that's 10 inches above the track. I can make my very own magnetically levitating train by using some cardboard, some magnets, and the more magnets I have, the longer the track I can make. I stick half of these magnets to one piece of masking tape, and I'll stick the rest to another piece of tape. Now I'm testing the magnets to make sure they're all on the right way. I want all the magnets on the track to repel this magnet. Uh-oh, wrong way. To fix that, I just flip the magnet over. Now I've drawn two parallel lines along this cardboard, and I'll attach my two strips of magnets along them. So my train doesn't fly off the track, I need some guide walls. And there's my magnetic track. All I need now is a floating train. And for a train, I need a piece of cardboard that will fit just inside these walls. To make the train levitate, I put a magnet in each corner and I make sure each one is repelled by the track. Welcome to the Charlie Express! All aboard! Okay, so floating an object that has magnets attached is pretty cool. But how about levitating an object that doesn't have magnets attached? Sounds like science fiction, right? Wrong. Scientists have made things like dice, jacks, grasshoppers, and even frogs levitate by placing them inside a strong magnet, about 1,000 times stronger than a refrigerator magnet. Everything in the universe is made up of small particles called atoms. When these atoms are placed in a strong magnet, they act like little magnets. So it's like the frog is made of billions of tiny magnets. Each one is repelled by the strong magnet, and the frog floats like it was in space. Wow, I mean, it would be so cool if I could levitate. Hey, wait a minute. Guys, this is what I had in mind. Help! Guys, let's get out!
Check this out. Who would drive a car like this to work? Must be some awesome character. This is where they make one of the coolest comic books in the world.
Can you hold a moment, please? Hello, may I help you?
Hi, where can I find the guy who drives that amazing car out there?
He's over there.
What's with the cape? Who are you?
Hey, hi, good morning. I am Al Simmons, Spawn, I am both. Here, let me take you back and show you what it's all about, Vanessa.
Al's roommate from college, the creator of the superhero Spawn, named the Spawn character after Al. The same way that Clark Kent is the alter ego of Superman, Al Simmons is the alter ego of Spawn.
Todd McFarlane, who created Spawn, Vanessa, he'll call up one of his artists and they'll sit down and plot this out.
They create thumbnails to illustrate the story. It's the artist's job to take these thumbnails, or rough drafts, and transform them into the Spawn characters we see in the comic books every month.
These drawings are called pencils.
Once the pencils are done, the inker takes the pencil sketches and goes over them with India ink to bring out the characters.
How would you like to give inking a try?
I'd love to. This is so cool. I'm actually inking a page of Spawn for the next issue. Inking is what creates the feeling of a comic book. Like if there's a scary scene, you add more shadow. Or if you want to make the mood different, you just lighten things up a bit. Come with me. We get to meet the creator of Spawn, Todd McFarlane. Todd?
Came back in there.
Yeah. Yes,
ma'am. Hi, I'm Vanessa.
Hey, Vanessa, how are you doing today? You know why I gave him such a big cape there? The toughest thing to learn is to draw is anatomy, the human body. So if I cover it up with a drapery, they go, wow, that Todd, he knows how to draw the human body. But the answer is I never actually see it. So it's I just trick people all the time, right?
So you're actually lazy to make a body, just put over a
that's
cape.
That's right. Although I'm lazy, they call it style.
The inked drawings are scanned into a computer. And then,
it's the colorist's job to bring every scene to life with color.
Take the pen.
Cool.
And draw, just like an outline, like you're drawing with a pencil.
What a neat pen.
Hit the J key, and that's the airbrush.
and then you can just spray right over the top of your selection.
Cool. There. See, it's getting lighter.
Now you can see what you've done.
I don't know. It's kind of funny.
And now, the lettering.
This is how they put in all that neat dialogue. They used to do it by hand, but now it's mostly done on computers.
So what we have to do here, Vanessa, is we have to take the black and white from the letterer and color it and basically cut and paste things like croon and dialogue and drop it on the actual artwork. So do you want to give it a try?
Yes.
B.
And then go ahead and click on that and then paste it down on there.
Whoa.
Cool, look at that.
That's huge.
Vanessa, here it is, the issue of Spawn we worked on together. Here, I autographed it for you.
Thanks so much. You can get this issue of Spawn next month in comic book stores. But I think I'll go read mine right now.
Still coming up with new ideas yet to be conceived by science?
Way past that. My PCR idea I'm changing into a series of comic books.
Comic books?
PCR Man. The only one on the planet who can program a VCR from a distance. He helps good people by programming their VCRs with the shows they've missed. And he taunts the bad guys by programming their VCRs with the schlockiest TV shows on the planet 24 hours a day.
So now that's the Tyler I know and love. See you next time.